From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Hurricane Michael has made landfall on the Florida panhandle. As of this recording, winds had reached speeds of 145 miles per hour. According to CBS News, Michael could be the worst storm ever to hit the panhandle. Florida Governor Rick Scott issued evacuation orders earlier this week. And on Wednesday morning, he tweeted, "The time for evacuating along the coast has come and gone. About 30 million people are in the hurricane's path." As if underscoring the advent of yet another intense hurricane, the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a major report on October 8th and warned that we have about a dozen years before the worst impacts of climate change can be staved off. Deborah Roberts, a co-chair of the Working Group on Impacts, said, quote, "It's a line in the sand, and what it says to our species is that this is the moment and we must act now. This is the largest clarion bell from the science community." The report was the product of the Paris Accord, signed in December 2015, and it will be formally presented at the next UN Climate Conference in Poland later this year. The question of how we transition to a new economy and adapt to a changing climate are among the things I want to discuss with my guest, Candy Mossett. She's the Native Energy and Climate Campaign Organizer with Indigenous Rising, a project of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Welcome to the program, Candy.
Thank you for having me back. I have had one change. My last name is White now. I was married. So thank you.
Well, congratulations. So, Candy, how do you view what we have seen taking place this summer? Right, last year we had Hurricane Maria. We had, all of these crazy storms that were supposed to be once in a decade storms. This year we've had Hurricane Florence. Now we have Hurricane Michael, which generated so much speed so fast that people haven't even had a chance to understand that it might even be more dangerous than Florence. The Earth is trying to tell us something, right?
I feel like that is exactly what's happening. And I've been saying it, for it feels like a number of years. It's frustrating. It's frustrating that people aren't taking the situation of our very survival of humanity as seriously as we should be, when the Earth is literally screaming at us, warning us to take action and to do something about it. Because at the end of the day, the Earth will go on. She will continue to spin and probably heal herself, shake us off like an old batch of fleas on a dog and get on with it. What are we thinking as humanity, thinking that we're above being here? You know, there were other extinction times. We know that there was dinosaurs that roamed the Earth once that weren't here. What makes us think that we're some greater power that is going to be, here forever? I'm sitting here, Sonali, I'm 5 months pregnant. I'm so emotional because I believe that we can change the course of our fate. I believe that we can change our trajectory of how we are impacted by the climate that we are directly impacting. But it's frustrating to have number 45 in there as our president. It's frustrating when people go on my page and they say, "You're just an activist. You're just an environmentalist. How do you get around? Do you drive a car?" Oh, these storms happen all the time. These hurricanes are a normal, natural occurrence, people say. Not in the way that we've been seeing them. The intensity, the frequency, the number of deaths. This is not normal, what we've been seeing with the typhoons and everything that the Earth is screaming at us to do. And so, yes, I have the hope that we can keep going. I also feel like, what more does it take? You're not going to believe traditional knowledge, which as Native people, we hold that knowledge. You don't believe scientists who put it together with that knowledge. What will it take for people to wake up?
It seems as though all of the wisdom is being rejected. The indigenous traditional wisdom and science. So the IPCC report, which came out today, which affirms everything that indigenous communities had predicted would happen. If you abuse the earth will hit you back. And this new report gives us a specific timeline. It says it was written by 91 authors from 40 countries, 6,000 scientific references, tens of thousands of expert reviewers, including governments. And it's basically saying we have a dozen years before it's runaway climate change. Donald Trump has basically dismissed that. His government has basically dismissed that. And unfortunately, he has a lot of traction among those moneyed interests that want to keep making money off of fossil fuels. So they spread misinformation. And sadly, his base seems to believe that. But say for those people who are living in the Gulf Coast or living in, North Carolina, South Carolina, and have lived there for years, they should know, shouldn't they, in their gut, that something isn't right?
Well, and they do. And I have friends there. You know, I have friends fighting against the Bayou Bridge pipeline down in Louisiana. I have people that live in the Gulf Coast that are fighting. People in Texas, you know, there's communities, there's organizations, there's the Loyas Levy camp, there's Tejas, there's organizations and people that have been fighting back, and it's this slow motion thing, it feels like, where yes, people are fighting back, but then you're right, you have those that care about money, and it's insane when you think about the resources that we have: oil, coal, gas, what have you. Why isn't anybody thinking about the resources of our air and our water and our soil and how we're impacting the shifts of the climate as a whole? How humanity isn't above anything. We're a part of that cycle. We're a part of that system. And it's been prophesized and it's been talked about. And so the people in the global South that I know, that I'm friends with, that I've been working with, are feeling the same emotions, I'm sure. I can't speak on their behalf, but there are those that are fighting back. Mm-hmm. By and large, though, it's a system that we live in which uses television, it uses propaganda to continue to control people. And it's easy to do when people are just going about their everyday lives, worried about, you know, their children's health or worried about their job, and not able to see this big picture of this planet and what's happening on an earth scale. And they're controlled by the propaganda around us.
So, Candy, speaking of resources, every time we have an environmental disaster, sometimes exacerbated by human-made issues, just because, you know, we haven't been protecting our infrastructure enough, we need resources to rebuild communities. And those resources are finite because, you know, the government has projected in its budget, okay, every year we usually need about this much. But when these extreme weather events related to climate change are happening on a more frequent level, the devastation is greater. The government is going to need to budget greater and greater amounts for rebuilding. And where's that money going to come from, right? So they aren't even thinking long-term about rebuilding. How critical is it for us to remind ourselves that we're sort of writing off swaths of our population to be victims of climate change?
It's scary, and it's necessary that people understand that it's real. It's not a movie, it's not a novel, it's not a made-up thing. There are people that are out there that are bad people. They're not good human beings, and they don't care that a certain amount of the population is going to die as a result of global climate change. And it's likely the populations along the coast, it's likely the populations in low-income areas, it's likely, the Pacific Islanders, the islands are going under. They are right now, currently, not because of this report that came out, you know, not because of stuff that we know. It's been happening. And it's so critical to take that moment to think it's real. And I and my family and my babies and my kids, we could all be written off. What are we going to do about it? And not to get stuck in apathy. That's a very dangerous thing. Not to think, well, you know, everything causes cancer. Everything makes us sick. We're all going to die anyway. That's the worst attitude that anybody could take, because that plays right into the bad people. That plays right into the, you know, the evil side of what's happening. And instead, to just take that step, the first thing a person can do as an individual, get yourself reconnected with that sacredness of the earth that we all have. a lot of times us Native people, we call it blood memory. It exists in every single one of us, whether we remember it or not, whether we feel it or not. That reconnection is what kept Native people living upon this land peacefully for thousands of years. It's only been since the Industrial Revolution, really, revolution, in the past 200 years that we've really gone downhill and changed things for the worse for ourselves as humanity. And so if we can take time to reconnect with the sacredness, we can change the course of our future. That too, just like all this other stuff, that too has been prophesized, that we have a choice to take one of two paths. Right now we have our foot down, one foot down the wrong path. We can pull that foot back. It's just an awakening, an awareness amongst people to take that next step and not fall into that trap of capitalism and decolonize our minds. It's really hard. It's hard to decolonize your mind. But if you potentially, you know, practice it every single day, there's books that have been written by Native scholars and authors around decolonization. It can be done. We just have to do it as individuals and not sit back and say, somebody else will fix the climate crisis. Our government will save us. It's God's will, because that's using religion, which is not smart to do either. We have to take that from within.
Candy, let's talk about the program that your organization, Indigenous Environmental Network, has called Just Transition, which is one place that people who want to support the work that IEN does can also make donations to. Tell us about Just Transition.
It's not a new thing. It's become a kind of a buzzword as of late. It really started like labor unions. People working within unions were seeing that people were getting sick and dying on the job. They were seeing that workers were having problems with the way that some of these industries were operating, with their poisons. Especially fossil fuel industries, because of the poisons and the toxins and the chemicals that are used inadvertently as a result of that, especially these extreme extraction processes we're seeing now, tar sands extraction, fracking, uranium development even. And so as Native people, we've talked about for thousands of years walking lightly upon the land. This transition is more of a modern day spin. The 21st century, how do we save ourselves, essentially? And so it's a transition away from the fossil fuel economy. It is stopping now any new development, moratoriums, bans, to stop the development that we've already know has caused too much carbon in the atmosphere, too much methane in the atmosphere, all of these emissions of our natural cycles, nitrogen, carbon, methane. These are all natural cycles. They're being thrown out of whack and out of balance by us putting way too much, digging it out of the earth, extracting it. And so the Just Transition principles talk about how each community has a say in a way in which they'll move forward, because it's going to be different for everybody no matter where you are. For example, I'm from Newtown, North Dakota, the Fort Berthold Reservation. You know, I'm a Mandan Hidatsa Rikara woman, and we were farming tribes. We want to bring back those seeds through seed exchanges. We want to look at how our seeds are totally drought resistant. They're we don't need pesticides. They're pesticide resistant. These are seeds that we still have that are in danger of disappearing because of Monsanto, because of GMOs, because of, you know, what people perceive as corn, yellow corn. They think it's the only thing. No, we have so many varieties. That's just one example of bringing back a transition. We're looking at hemp development throughout the state of North Dakota. We have all of this beautiful flatland that we can develop hemp and use over 25,000 uses that are so much more beneficial to our environment and our society. And wind, small scale distributed wind, nothing corporate, nothing large scale. Use what you have in your community to bring back the jobs for the workers, to not emasculate our men, which is what happened to Native people. You know, our warrior status was stripped from us, and men were defeated. And we were told, now you're going to do this. And we were told, now you're going to do that. You're going to become cattlemen. You're going to become ranchers. Now people are attacking us for eating beef, you know, and it's like, what do we, you know, we keep being told by another society, this is what we do. And so it's like, okay, how do we regain our blood memory? Use what we have in the land in a good way where we are. That's what Just Transition means. Go away from the fossil fuel industry and pick up those gifts that are given to us by nature and use them in a good way like we have for thousands of years prior to this, without pipelines, without oil, without coal, without gas. We survived and managed not to kill the planet. I'm not saying go back, you know, to the Stone Age. I'm not saying, you know, be dramatic and extreme, but we do have to look at the action that we have to take now, that we had to take yesterday, and not just sit idly by and wait for somebody else to do it.
The phrase you used earlier, walk lightly upon the earth, really stood out for me. And it seems as though every action that we take, and not just as individuals, because unfortunately too much emphasis is usually just placed on personal responsibility, right? But we're talking about policymakers that make decisions for how our cities are built and how our roads are built and how vehicles function, etc. To walk lightly upon the earth is such a good guiding principle that naturally points towards, say, solar and wind energy over the extractive fossil fuels that are so damaging to the earth, both in the extraction process and then, of course, in the actual consumption process. So this particular Just Transition program, does it focus on Native communities? Are there specific places where the transition program that people can help to fund is actually being implemented?
Yeah. Right now we have three places. We have the Fort Berthold Reservation, which is right in the middle of the Bakken fracking boom right now in North Dakota, taking those steps away from digging out and extracting from the earth and moving forward. We have the Crow Reservation in Montana that's working on the Centerpole project, working on Just Transition, where there's already a whole community in place, a bit further developed than what we're working on at Fort Berthold. And then we have the United Houma Nations in Louisiana in the south that are working on seed saver exchanges, food banks, working on medicine wheels of gardens that are being put together with Monique Verdin is her name, that's helping us there. And Peggy Berryhill is helping us in Crow. And then we're leading up the charge in Fort Berthold, because it has to be the people from their own communities. They know their communities best. But I did want to comment on something you said about, you know, how the onus is always put on the individual. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm so tired of the industry saying it's supply and demand. Turn off your water when you brush your teeth. Well, they simultaneously not only use, but poison billions of gallons of water a minute. It's happening right now. And the industry makes gas guzzling vehicles when they know we're in a climate crisis. Why? I would love to drive a Tesla if I could afford it, or, you know, or something where I can plug in my own car from my own solar panel. Solar panels can be made from ash and bone. We know that there's technologies that we don't have to use precious minerals. Why isn't that being done? It all comes back to money. That's the bottom line of these industries. They don't want to lose money. Why are they allowed to make styrofoam cups? We know how bad styrofoam is for the environment. All these things that they put the people on, they shouldn't even be allowed to put them on the shelves. And people attack me all the time. What do you drive? Does your vehicle run on unicorn farts? I had one guy say to me, you cracked me up. I was like, you have a good point. But no, you know, it's a hybrid, and I worked really hard and paid like 10 years to be able to afford this hybrid vehicle. And I am trying the best I can. Where is my ability to get something that I know it's not going to harm my children? For the most part, I try to walk. But living in Montana and North Dakota, you're not walking many places in the winter, especially with kids. I have a 5-year-old. So we garden. I teach her about where to get water, where to get medicines, where to get our traditional foods, because they're here. They're in the ground. We have all kinds of berries and turnips and ground cherries and sand cherries and water places. She knows how to garden. At 5 years old, she's planted all her own seeds this year, and we had a huge garden. Those are the kind of things that we're going to have to get back to as humanity, whether we want to or not. Because think of this. What if one day you go to your tap and turn it on and nothing comes out? What if you go to a grocery store and there's nothing on the shelves? Are you going to know what to do? It's not a doomsday scenario. It's just thinking about the natural order of how we take care of ourselves and what sovereignty truly means. You can't truly be sovereign or take care of yourself if you can't even feed yourself. We've gotten too far into that somebody else will take care of me mode.
So, Candy, the three places that you mentioned where the Just Transition program is in place and working, they sound like they are really great models for that could be replicated elsewhere. So these are they self-sustaining? Are these, can you give us a little bit more detail about any one of them so that people can picture them and then see if there's a way to implement them in their own communities?
Yeah, and we're working really hard to make them self-sustaining. It is really, you know, it's a long process. Just Transition also doesn't happen overnight. You have to start with listening sessions in your own community or your own block. You know, if you're in a city, you can work on a Just Transition project block by block. And you can talk to your neighbors and all the people and see, well, what is it that we want to do? That's where it starts. It's not, you know, somebody deciding for everybody else what's best for them. It's really doing that listening session. And then you, if you are, you know, in a place like North Dakota, for example, and you can do some of those things I talked about, then do those. But if you're in a city, what about putting a garden on the roof and having a farmer's market every Saturday, or, you know, something. These are just ideas I'm throwing out there for Just Transition projects. And then we have community development financial institutions, which is actually what my husband is working on. It's how do we fund these projects? How do we get these startup costs in place and then make sure that the people that are in the communities are the ones running the projects and are also the ones that are making any kind of money or any kind of movement forward. And I'm not an expert on it. I'm like the visionary, which is really good that I have my husband working on that aspect of it. I'm the one who says, yeah, we can do this. And he's the one who helps finance it. So that helps to have a team of people that can look at how to finance these projects. For us, we're building earth lodges, for example. Those are our traditional homes that we lived in. And earth lodges with a modern spin. So they'll have a cement floor. They'll have a door. They'll have running water. But it's a round home and a round structure that is brilliant when it comes to heating and cooling because it's a natural process. And so how do we modernize these homes and use them right now, not to live in, but for cultural purposes and for teaching people about how to walk lightly on the land? Because some of it has been forgotten through colonization. But you can go to our website at www.ienearth.org. And we have a lot of programs. It's a clearinghouse of information on our website. But if you click on the Just Transition link, you'll see the principles that we came out with, the poster, the beautiful artwork that we did that's a guiding factor in the way you should be thinking about these Just Transition projects. You can also go to thecenterpole.com. It might be .org, thecenterpole.org, which is our Crow project in Montana to see how far they are. And right now, these are kind of like three pilot projects that we're doing, and we want to do a lot more. We want people to do more in their communities. And in fact, Just Transition is happening in a lot of places. It's not just within IEN.
So finally, Candy, if people do give to the Just Transition program, where does their donation go? What are some of the concrete things that get purchased with that for those three communities where it's in place?
It goes directly into being able to doing seed banking, seed exchanges, because it costs money to store seeds. We need to pay for the place where we're storing. It goes directly into materials, so building materials for homes, whether it be willows or cottonwoods or straw bales or the natural plaster to build the natural homes. Like in Crow, they're doing straw bale buildings that are already built, but need projects to be finished, you know, because it does take energy. It does take volunteers. And we would like to be able to pay people to help do this because they get done. The money goes into trainings, educational materials. To do those listening sessions, you have to have a place to host them. You have to be able to feed people. You know, hey, come on in. We're going to have some food and coffee, and we're going to do an educational forum. We want to do more solar panel trainings in our communities, and those aren't cheap. You can have people come in that show how to put the panels up, how to run the panels, how to continue to develop them, and then that creates jobs for the people in your community. But until they're trained, they can't just come in, put a panel, and leave. That's called parachuting in. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. So there has to be a really good foundation and a base built. And unfortunately, in order to do that in this day and age, it takes resources to be able to get the materials, to be able to get the trainings, to get the people together, to allow the educational tools, and then give the communities all the capacity they need to build up what they see. Mm-hmm.
Well, Candy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post links on our website to where people can find out about the Just Transition Program and also support it financially. Good luck to you. Good luck with your pregnancy. And thanks so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for everything you do, and to all your listeners. Mata Girads, thank you so much.
Thank you. Candy White is the Native Energy and Climate Campaign Organizer with Indigenous Rising, a project of the Indigenous Environmental Network. We've been discussing the latest climate news and how to transition to a climate-friendly economy. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.